Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
So Richard, we're a couple of weeks out from Christmas, and look, we're not going to be negative about Christmas now, but it can have its challenges.
Well,
so
Brendan, I'm like Jimmy Stewart this time of the year. I'm running down the street going, Happy Christmas, old building society. Okay. I get the vibe you might be a bit of a bah humbugger.
No, not at all.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Here we go, Brendan.
Great. Okay.
Optimistic.
Okay, all right. And now we've set it up. Now let's knock it down. Okay.
Let's tear it
apart. So we'll talk about navigating Christmas. Yeah. We'll call it navigating politely. People might be at the stage now where they're figuring out where they're going for Christmas, who they're spending it with, which house they're going.
Family dynamics.
A lot of politics there, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's an awful lot of politics around that stuff, isn't there? Whose house does the mother go, or the parents go to, or who do you go to? And, you know, who's got the
Is that the favourite? Is there competition for where the mother will go? Yeah,
the favourite might be, brought into sharp focus in those moments.
Okay.
Or who has more of a luxurious lifestyle. To go into. I mean, it can bring up all that kind of stuff, yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I always think Christmas is, it's a strange holiday. I mean, we have to acknowledge the absurdity of it. You know, it is an absurd thing, isn't it?
Go on.
It's just the absurdity of it, like that we chop down a tree, we stick it in the house, decorate it, and then Santa Claus comes and puts presents under us for all our children, and we're celebrating this thing, and then we throw it in the back of the car and dump it down in the local car park, and we move on to the next phase, into the next phase of our lives. There's an absurdity.
Richard, if you thought too much about anything in life, like these are the rituals and the things, these are the things we do to
there's
distract
an
ourselves.
An absurdity
from the fact that
that lies under all we do.
Yeah.
There is no doubt about it. And I think Christmas is profound. I think what I often think about Christmas is, I don't know if you ever read Marcel Proust, he's got this great novel called In Search of Times Past, A la Recherche du Temps Perdu. It's about like In Search of Lost Times, and he dips a madeleine in the story, he dips a madeleine, which is a little, one of those little cakes, into a cup of tea, and in that process it brings him back into profoundly deep memories. And I think Christmas is a madeleine. It brings us, because we're very habitual, we're very ritualistic species, we do things repeatedly,
yeah,
and once we do something repeatedly and we put meaning onto it, you know, it becomes incredibly a part of our DNA. And so when we go back every year into Christmas, we're going back into all that times lost, all that childhood stuff, what you got for Christmas, what things were like in the family, all those old Christmases, all those Christmases of times past are there. And so that's the
triggering. We call that, exactly, it is.
And that's the
it took him like, whatever, 9 books or whatever to say
to
it.
There.
We have a word for it now,
exactly.
Triggering. Yeah. Okay.
That's so it, I think. Yeah.
You have a revolutionary idea in terms of where where people should go and what they should do and who they should entertain or visit or whatever. Do what you want.
Yeah.
Do what makes you happy.
Yeah, I mean, that is revolutionary in some ways, isn't it? I suppose that's what I'd always say. Life is short here. Of course, we have to do some of the, obligatory visiting and all that kind of stuff. But if we just did a little bit more of what we wanted to do, our Christmas would be a little bit happier. Because a lot of us resent having to go somewhere and have the food that you don't want to have and be in the house that you don't want to be in and all that kind of stuff. And I say, well, if we did that less and did a little bit more of what we actually wanted to do, because these things are so fleeting.
You have to think about other people too. It kind of upsets other people if you do what you want, doesn't it?
Well, you might be surprised. It might not upset them as much as you believe. What I'm trying to say is not that you cut it out, but maybe you minimise it, that it's not the Everest of your day, that it can be a little bit of your day, but that the Everest could be the thing that you want to do more of. I do this myself in my life, and I find I love all seasons, but I do really enjoy Christmas.
Okay.
But I'm with family too, and I do all that bit as well. But
So manage it. And if people have questions, by the way, they usually do for you, Richard. They can text 51551, email brendan@rte.ie, and there's WhatsApp as well now, 087 032 3232. People want to give their kids everything they want at Christmas. They want them to have all the things they didn't have, etc. You're saying like temper expectations, but they're not good to give them everything they want.
Well, you said something so really, really important in there, because it was really deep. I don't even know if you kind of know. You said, parents try to give their kids what they didn't have. And our own childhood is always right in the mix when we're parenting. And it's a profound thing to see when I work clinically. You see a parent who's trying to change and fix something from their own childhood,
okay,
and they're bringing the exact same thing back into reality that they've experienced. And so it's the only time I disagree with Roald Dahl, right? I love Roald Dahl and I loved him as a kid. But when he's in the glass elevator with Charlie and he says, you know, the child, do you know what happened to the child who got everything, Charlie? And Charlie says, what? And he goes, he lived happily ever after. And I'm like, no, 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 Roald Dahl. No, no, he does not. He becomes incapable of relationships. He can't compromise. He becomes miserable and the person that people kind of avoid at parties because he's not very likable. Children shouldn't be getting everything that they want all the time. It's just not good for them. One of the most important things, and I'm not saying this, you know, it is an important thing that we don't make Christmas just absolutely endless gift receiving, because that's not good for your children. Okay. What I always put into my own children's psychology is about giving a gift as well to charity. What gift would you like to give to charity this year? Because I understand the research there. Altruism and doing things for others, an optimal chance of having a happier life than believing that everything goes your way and that you should get whatever you want and everybody will manoeuvre around you. And so just being careful with that, that you'll see it with kids. You'll see the expectancy that they develop, that they should be getting whatever it is they want. And you have to, as you said,
it's hard to disappoint them.
Well, you know what? This is the thing about us as parents. They're a lot more resilient. And you see how quickly the thing that they absolutely couldn't live without, when you help them out of that thinking, yeah, how quickly they move away from it. I know there's a lot of parents after last night, you know, the annual Christmas klaxon that was last night, the toy show. There's a lot of parents trying to figure out how to navigate that one now, you know. And so just be careful around the idea that this will absolutely disappoint my child. They'll have a desperate Christmas if they don't get this really expensive gift. That it's like, you've got to be careful there, because that's not actually what we want to instill in our children. Yeah. Yes, this is a time, of course, getting presents and all that, but it's also a time for them to think about others, and it's about time to, you know, not to believe that, because commercialism and all those ideas,
yeah,
are in here.
In fairness to the Late Late, because I did watch a good bit of it last night, I thought it was a
great,
good toy show this year.
I love it.
I don't think they were hammering the commercialism too much.
No,
but
I
Christmas,
don't, yeah.
Christmas in general,
like, we're
bombarded with materialism.
Oh, absolutely.
And the kids are being bombarded with, yeah, it now as well, oh, through
every device that they're on. It's just targeting them, because, you know, these products have never had more avenues into our children, and they can go directly to them outside the parents. They don't have to go through us anymore. They go directly to them through Roblox and through all the different platforms that they're on there, you know, playing their games and stuff. They're being targeted all the time. And also, we have to say, you know, for girls particularly between 8 and 10, they're being targeted by these lotions and potions. So they're setting them up for aesthetics and, you know, washing their face with chemicals.
It's
insane. It's
Sephora kids, I think they call
them.
And like,
it's nuts.
A lot of them not looking for cheap makeup. Apparently, the mothers say they're looking for the expensive stuff. Like,
they're washing away healthy oils, you know,
yeah,
and their innocence and childhood as well. And so you've got to be careful that we're not aligning, because there is massive pressure on us, you know, to get that,
okay,
for them. And I would say, no, you don't get that at Christmas. You don't get that stuff, because I'm very conscious of having three daughters. I don't want them to become so consumed about their aesthetics so early and that they're thinking, oh, her skin is much nicer than my skin.
Yeah. You are not enough. You are not enough.
Miserable
stuff. That's the message,
yeah, exactly,
being sent there. We're in the middle of a work Christmas party season. Now, you never go.
I never go. Caveat emptor. Buyer. Buyer beware, Brendan. I don't go to much of the, curiosity around colleagues and all that. I never go, because they're generally chaotic events that people forget that they're work dues, and they forget that they're in a work environment. And generally things come out like, you know what I've always thought about you, Brendan O'Connor? They say things after quite, you know, festive cheer, and they're drinking and they're having food, and they forget the parameters and they forget the boundaries, and all of a sudden they've got a HR situation going on Monday morning. And I don't want to be, you know, of course Christmas parties, they're great and all that, but I would say if you're going into them, be aware. They're a social event within the context of work.
Okay.
And people forget that. You know, I'm myself fully with my friends that I grew up with. Do you know what I mean? I'm absolutely, that's who I am. They know me for my whole life, and that's who I'm fully myself. But in a work environment that's like, you know, social and all that, there's a little bit of a guard there.
Okay, okay.
Because you don't fully know these people.
Do what you want in terms of Christmas Day.
What kind of message are we giving?
Don't go to the party, okay.
But if you go, not go to the party. If you go to the party, be mindful of yourself.
Yeah,
because
okay,
the amount of people I've worked with over the years, I mean, I could go case study that have lost their job because of the Christmas party or got themselves into serious trouble because of the Christmas party. That's what I'm saying. Just be warm, be wary, be aware of that, you know, problem.
Okay, let's go back to the families for a minute. So you do gather wherever you gather, right? And, you know, we've talked about this before. You're back in the family of origin. Yeah. Could be in the house you grew up in as well, which again is...
Madeline.
You
Latin,
there you go. Slash trigger, right?
Sitting in the bedroom.
Everyone's regressing.
A teenager once again.
Yeah, I like to distance myself. I don't know what you're talking about here. Okay.
Exactly.
So how do we prepare ourselves for that? I know, it'll all go out the window once you get there, but
that's the thing.
Let's try and prepare.
The analogy I always use for this is that once you step in that door, it's like the event horizon of a black hole, you know. Everything gets sucked out of you. You know what I mean? You go in, I go in myself for all the, I'm not going to fall to that. I'm not going to be the youngest son here. I'm not going to say those things. The rational brain just disappears. It disappears and you're kind of saying the same thing again. You're going, oh, geez. And then they're looking, you're going, oh, that, he's the wild one there. And you're going, oh, I just fed into the label that they've always had for me, or the difficult one, or the, you know, the easily angered one, or the irritable one. I've fallen into that, or the responsible one. The bloody eldest child is taking over the Christmas dinner again. And all of that stuff. It's powerful stuff. And what I would do as a tip and all that, I would talk to myself about it. And I'd understand homeostasis. Balance, right? Family's label, not out of meanness, out of trying to reduce complexity of the family. The family is the most complicated system we will ever have to navigate as human beings, right? Particularly the one of origin, the one where you grew up with, and your siblings who know every little button to push in you there to get you going. And so the family is the most complicated thing. So what I'd always say about homeostasis, which is the balance, the equilibrium of the family, if you want to change that, change how you talk to yourself about your role and your position in the family, change how you interact with people, and that will push the homeostasis to react and change, and people will interact with you differently. We teach people how to interact with us. And so we get labelled and we fall into this very, like, labels don't predict the future. They kind of write them.
You've got power here. Then, how do you exercise that power?
I wouldn't fall into the label. I wouldn't go into the label, let's say, the really good daughter or the really responsible one or the irritable one or the aggressive one. Or I would say that label wasn't fit for purpose. That was never me to begin with. That was just a desire for the system to reduce the complexity. And that never really fitted me anyway. And so I'm not going to live up to it. Don't live up. That's what I'm saying to you. Don't live up to the label. Change it. Watch what happens. It will be a fascinating psychological study for this Christmas.
People aren't going to react well to that kind of thing.
They're not. They're going to push you back.
You be yourself, you're saying, in that situation. So,
be
so,
more yourself.
So far,
be more
Do what you want. Don't go to the office party. Be yourself with your family. Okay, this is
you'll
all
have a great
well.
Christmas.
And come here. What about any tip for in the moment then, right?
Yeah.
All the best will in the world. Somebody is being themselves, refusing to fit into their role and all that. And then they're in the moment.
There's a comment.
And they want to react. Is there any way of checking yourself there before that loop kicks in?
Here's the thing. I always think, and I know you're going to laugh at this, but I never would let someone say something and I remain quiet in that moment. I would never stay silent when someone said something passively aggressive about me, right? I would call it out because you'd understand that a passively aggressive person doesn't want to take responsibility for being aggressive. They don't feel they have that capacity. So they say passive things to you to annoy you and to upset you, but they can say, I was just joking, Brendan, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, why are you reacting like that for? So I'd always react in a way that my cognition isn't hot. Hot cognition is you're emotional and you're saying things back and that's everything's gone, right? I'd say things nice and cold cognition. I'd always have this little tip, and the amount of people actually, Brendan, who've emailed me to say that has helped me so much in the family that I grew up in when I go into it. Where's the joke there? What's that about? Nice and calm.
Are you not in danger then? If you see, the passive aggressive person has plausible deniability.
Yes, they do.
Joking. They were just saying
joking.
I know Richard's being all like, whoa about it.
Well, where's the joke? Explain the joke to me. A passive aggressive person.
You always have to cause trouble.
How is there trouble when I'm asking you to explain the joke?
Why do you always have to be like this? I was only making a joke, and here you
but
are.
But what is the joke?
Calling it out, and it's Mr. Psychotherapist.
No, but what is the joke?
It was just a joke, Richard.
This is great role play. But that's exactly what happens in dinner. Here's the worst part: is if I go quietly, resentful, and off into my shell, and I allow you to dominate me. That's not a good position to be in.
Okay.
That's not a good place to be. I know, if you said that to someone who's passive aggressive, they'll think twice about saying things.
Okay.
He calls me out and things.
Okay.
The worst thing we have for any of this stuff is silence. And
say you're not with your own family, you're with your, like, we don't want to demonize people's in-laws, you're with a house that isn't,
I'm lucky,
your
immediate, I've got great in-laws.
I am too. A house that isn't,
that's
your,
Christmas sorted,
your
Brendan.
Immediate family. Yeah. Any extra layers of
well, you know what I'd always do there? Yeah, I'd go for a walk.
Okay.
Honestly, I'd go for a walk, get out, go for, I might even Christmas Day go for a swim or whatever it is. If I'm down in West Cork, I might go for a nice walk, go for a swim, whatever it is. And then you're pulling, you're just, you know, you're not, if you know, if things have got a little bit that you're not comfortable with, just go for a little walk in a way that's like, you know, I'm going for a walk, I might go for a swim.
Okay.
Just pull yourself out.
Break
a bit
the
of distance,
dynamic.
Because when you come back into the dynamic again, it will have changed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So just break that. If you see it going a certain way, I just get a bit of distance from it. In a nice way that you're not fighting, because, you know, either your wife's family and all that, you don't want to, or your husband's family, you don't want to cause any problems there, because you want them to enjoy their Christmas. So I'm just going to go for a walk.
What's this? The next piece of advice. Yeah. Walk away.
Yeah.
Walk away
exactly,
from the in-laws. You also say, and I think this is important too, don't be taking stuff personally. Don't be looking for offence everywhere. Because
you see, this is the thing.
One can get kind of ready for...
You're right.
A situation like, you know.
Absolutely. We can have a difficult relationship with someone, right? Of course we're going to have that. If anybody comes into a family and all that and marries into the family and all of those things, you're dealing with personalities. Doesn't mean they're bad or good or all of that kind of thing, but we might have a difficult relationship. And when we have a difficult relationship with someone, we generally gear the mind up confirmation bias. I don't like this person, so I'm looking for confirmation bias that this is not a good person. And so when they say pass the salt or whatever they say to me, I know they've said it in an aggressive way or meaning and all that.
I know what you meant by that.
I know what you meant. Oh, pass the salt, is it? Here's the bloody broccoli, right? And so I would say always just watch that piece. Just watch your reality creation around somebody. And another thing I'd always say to myself, they're married to someone or they're in a relationship with someone. Somebody loves them. What am I missing about them? I'd be curious, what is it about them that I miss? Or what is it about them that brings up something for me that I react to? A little bit of like self-awareness around it, and then try to be a little bit more aware of your confirmation bias and don't react to things when they say things. That maybe that's just me actually thinking or putting context on what they're saying to me. Maybe they're just saying, pass the salt.
Yeah, okay. So listen, they're all in a way best case scenarios, okay? There's people texting and WhatsApping here now, and these are real issues,
okay?
So I've struggled with Christmas since the death of my mom as a teenager. Yeah. Now in my mid-50s with 20-something sons, it's always really quiet with just my small family around me, no extended family to visit. It can feel lonely. This year, my brother died. Suddenly, our world has shrunk even further. Any ideas to celebrate the small family? People who have variations of loneliness or don't have a massive big circle in their lives can feel very left out and isolated at Christmas sometimes, that they're not having the Christmas that everyone else seems to have, these jolly Christmases.
Yeah, that's a really great message, because that's a lot of people. And I think Christmas puts that incredible pressure. You know, it's the most wonderful time of the year, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I think the thing about Christmas is the reason we love it and the reason we have such magic in it is the very same reasons why we have such loneliness in it and such sadness and profound sadness, because it's about being together and it's about sharing things together. Like I said about the Madeleine, brings you back to contact with things. But when you've lost somebody early in your life, like your mother, and then, you know, you're going into Christmas and you're trying to look around, who do I have in my life and why aren't I having the Christmas that everyone... Because it is a kind of a, you know, hallmark kind of idea. Everybody's having the greatest Christmas, which is, a lot of rubbish, let's be honest. Like, everyone's having the most perfect Christmas and all the cards that are coming in, everything is perfect. But that's not the reality of a lot of people's experience of Christmas. And in that one, I'd say when you've lost somebody, Brendan, this is such an important kind of conversation. When you've lost somebody in a year, and that's a real deep sadness, you have to allow for the fact that it's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
You have to allow yourself to grieve. That's a really important thing, because we try to kind of like plaster over and say, we'll have a great Christmas now this Christmas. But that's not what's going to happen there, because all those firsts, like the first anniversary, the first birthday, the first, you know, all of that stuff, the first Christmas particularly, like, because when we celebrate anything ritualistically, the meaning in that is profound. And what I'd say is watch your expectations and try to celebrate. Your family doesn't have to be this huge, big, you know, I don't know, I can't think of a huge family, to be honest, as an example. But, you know, it doesn't have to be that. And so you can celebrate. I have a small family myself. I celebrate that. I like the intimacy of that small little family. And that's what I celebrate. I suppose it's about understanding that a lot of it is pressure on us around consumerism and the ideal of Christmas. A lot of that is not true. You know what I mean? Yeah. So just watch that idea that this everyone else is having the most wonderful Christmas. Just, you know, watch that thing, because that's pressure on us.
Okay. And just, so I'm hearing two things. Yeah. Now, one is acceptance.
Acceptance, and allow yourself to grieve.
Accept this Christmas.
Exactly.
Is going to be different.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is the comparing.
Yeah, watch the, because we always say here, comparison is the thief of joy. But there's an awful lot of pressure on us to really enjoy Christmas and have the one most wonderful Christmas of all time. All the songs are cloyingly sweet and telling us how everything is so perfect this time of year. And of course it's not. We're living our lives and we've all the same problems we've had just a month ago. You know what I mean? All those problems are there, but we tried to kind of wallpaper over them for a couple of 48 hours and then probably go back into them even worse in January when we get all the bills coming in and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So just watch that idea that everyone's having a great time.
People put huge pressure on themselves.
That's not.
And huge pressure on it to be amazing. And actually, if you chill, you can actually end up having a lovely time, like kind of in a more chill way. You mentioned the bills, Richard, and look, there's going to be people now who are already maxed out on credit cards and everything, feeling
most
that consumer's pressure
we
talked about earlier. And then I suppose a lot of couples don't talk to each other about money or confide either. So it can be a lot of stress going on there, unspoken stress.
Simmering away secret stress there. And I see it so much in my clinic over the years working. The amount of people who come in around December, right, with all this pressure, like we've just described, all this pressure to have this Christmas. And then the relief mid-January in some ways that it's over. Right, and so we have to watch that. It's only a couple of days, right? And I would really, as a message to people, just be careful of that idea about lumping incredible debt onto yourself, because I wrote an article last week in The Examiner about this, and I was saying, you know, just think about your own Christmases, Brendan. How many, if I said to you, honestly, how many toys can you remember that you got? How many?
Two or three things, but nothing. Nothing of consequence.
What is it that you really? Money. Yeah, exactly. What is it that you really remember? The love that you shared and all that kind of stuff. So, I think we get pushed into this idea around consumerism and that's what it's about. We have to be careful. Of course, there's going to be presents there under Christmas tree, and Santa will come and all that stuff. But we have to watch around the amount that we put under the Christmas tree, you know, that Santa brings, and we have to watch the massive rising debt that we're going to push on ourselves in January, because January is the cruelest month, I think, right? And it's really problematic. And then you throw all this debt, and particularly credit card debt. I mean, you know, the most expensive debt you can take on, and so the whole year starts off with this really awful deficit. And I would say, just watch that. Kids don't really need it.
Yeah, and look, it's pat and twee to say it in a way. And look, the two of us are comfortable enough, so it's easy to say. But in general, it's a truism that we all know that what they want, what kids want, is your time and your full undivided attention, isn't it?
What do we remember?
Yeah.
It's the love we shared with people. You know, it can be a really magic time and all of that, and sitting down together and the food and all that. But it's not really about this material gain. And that's, you know, yeah, you're right. You know, we're comfortable enough for that. But I certainly don't, you know, overindulge ever, really, you know, because I know where it goes in the child psychology. They begin to like take everything for granted. Nothing has meaning. That, you know, through a chink too wide, there comes in no wonder, says Kavanagh. That idea that, you know, they're too wide, get everything, no joy, no wonder.
Okay. There's a difficult one here, Richard, but it might be useful for a lot of people in different ways. This person just got very bad news. Should they wait till after Christmas to tell their teens who love Christmas and celebrate their birthdays then too?
Yeah, I might do. I mean, again, it depends on the person and the situation and the news there. But I might wait. I might have the Christmas and try to just have that Christmas and then, you know, and start
the
year.
Deal with
and
the reality
open, transparent.
Then.
But like, watch yourself. I mean, that's the reality of life. Life continues, you know. Illnesses don't stop for Christmas, and we, you know, prognosis and diagnosis don't stop because it's Christmas. That's the reality here, Brendan. And just watch that idea of the most wonderful time of the year, because life goes on and things happen to us. And if it was me, I suppose I'm not speaking like psychotherapy. I think personally, if it was me, I'd probably wait till after Christmas, try to give them as normal a Christmas as possible, and then I'd sit down with them and I'd share that unfortunate news and watch their support for you and that, and you know, and best of luck, and hopefully it works out well.
Yeah. Divorced mom of four children here. Both my parents have passed away. Woke up this morning to a huge sense of dread about Christmas. My 20th year making Christmas dinner. I don't like cooking. Since my marriage ended almost 7 years ago, I host Christmas for my aunt, my sister, her family. Then my children leave on Christmas evening to stay with their father. I go from having a full house of people to being on my own. So look, I think in general, she's saying, any advice to divorce separated moms who feel lonely and ignored? For families in general that are separated, divorced, it's very difficult.
It's very tricky. I meet that in the clinic a lot, you know, then, and the negotiations around, you know, who goes to who for Christmas and who gets Christmas Eve and who gets Christmas Day. And it can be very, very emotionally unsettling for parents, there's no doubt about it. And what I'd say always there is, you know, first of all, why are you dragging all the cooking on yourself when you hate cooking? You know, what's that about?
Yeah, and could you go back to advice one?
Yeah, go back to step one. And maybe, because I hear the desire towards having a group and having like connection, all that, of course, that's great. But is there any way to alleviate that stress? Because I can hear the different stresses here. One of them is having to do the big dinner on your own, you know, and the family arriving. You want the family to arrive, but is there any way you can, like, you know, can you do the, you know, this Christmas, you know, I think, Mike, Brendan, would you do the potatoes and I'll do this and that. And so you're making it less about all of the pressure on you, because it's not good balance when you're the one person doing it. So that's the first little bit. I'd say, could you have a conversation with the family and say, look, I love you coming over, but I'm just a bit burnt out this Christmas. Any chance of, you know, mucking in? I'd say they'd be delighted.
For separated parents who are maybe managing small kids as well, which is more difficult at Christmas.
There's so much that goes on there as I'm thinking about that. There's so much that goes on there about devices and games and good time parent and stricter parent, and there's all of this stuff that goes on in the mix in separating divorced families and that kind of stuff.
So
and
there needs to be a united front, even if the parents don't get on well. They need to be added among.
It depends. But it depends on the reasoning for the separation and divorce. Of course, it can be very hurt people. And so what I'd say always there around the loneliness, is there anything that you could organise there for when they're leaving, that you'd have something organised with the girls or to go into town or just to kind of, like, you know, preempt that loneliness, because of course that's going to be profound. You've had a busy house and now the kids are off at dad, and of course you're going to go this place in your head, as we compare all the time, are they having a better time in dad's house and are they enjoying it more, are they getting bigger presents, what's going on in dad's house, and all of a sudden you're on your own and you're left with those thoughts of Christmas, and that's problematic. I would say try to preempt that sense, because she knows the message there, knows that that's what's going to happen. I would try to organise a little thing there.
Yeah.
You know, a little. Or
okay,
maybe
so a lot of this is about practical stuff,
yeah,
actually.
Just
even
very
thinking
practical.
Of get out for a walk, go for a swim, whatever.
Meet up with friends.
Someone here is suggesting playing board games is great when you have a small group for Christmas. And
brilliant.
And it just like gives everybody
a bit of
jollity.
Just a bit of crack, exactly, yeah.
And so listen, look, the big thing I'm hearing across all of that is like that we're all putting too much pressure.
It's absurd. The whole thing is absurd anyway. So let's just see the absurdity, laugh it a little bit, enjoy it, step into the magic of it, not take it all too so seriously. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be this idea of these cloyingly songs that are out on the radio all the time about the wonderful Christmas. Just have your Christmas and maybe lean into more what would you like for Christmas, and maybe things would go a little bit nicer for you.
Controversial. Okay, psychotherapist Richard Hogan, thank you very much. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, Brendan.